and welcome to another edition of Wrestling with Death. I am your ghost host with the most, the Reaper Matt Conard, and today's guest is an up-and-comer here in the Pittsburgh area. He's held multiple championships within the area, and has a bright future in my opinion, and is also a upholder of the law. That's a first. Ladies and gentlemen, David Lawless, how are you, sir?
Oh, great. Thank you for having me. And as David Lawless would say, for all the morons listening out there, you're welcome for being a guest on this podcast.
That's a great way to get those fives or tens of followers I told you about was insult them.
Yes. Well, actually, what I wanted to say to really introduce myself was I'm on the square. And I'm on the level, and I am ready to swear right now before the day.
It's what they just heard, so it's great.
Yeah.
Great way to go. Let's just address the law part of it. You're a lawyer.
That's correct.
You're an actual lawyer.
Yes, I am a practicing
lawyer. What are you doing
lawyer?
In this business?
You are not the first person to ask me that, and you will probably not be the last.
Probably not.
So I went to law school with Chris LaRusso.
I would hope so.
Yeah, good friend of ours.
Yeah.
And then I knew he was wrestling at the time, and I was always a huge fan and had always wanted to wrestle, but I was not in the shape to do it. Then when I got my first job, which is my job now at Robert Pearson Associates, I was going to a coffee proprietor known as Cool Beans, and there were two garishly dressed young men that were working at the Cool Beans in my building, who you may know as Jack Pollock and Marcus Mann.
I'm aware of them.
And I wound up learning that Jack was a professional wrestler. And I'm like, really?
That's what he likes to call himself.
Yeah. He's probably not listening, so
he's
it doesn't matter.
It's a common theme on his podcast. He's not listening.
So I ran into them, and then once I started getting in a little better shape and I turned 30, and I realized that I didn't want to be a 35 or 40-year-old man in this law industry that gave up on their dream, I said, you know what? I'm going to do it. And thanks to Jack and Marcus pushing me in the direction to get training. And then I reconnected with Chris and then met Brandon Kay. And both of them trained me. And people have been asking me ever since. I get both questions. I get, you know, why did you do it? And why are you, you know, still wrestling? Like, why are you just killing yourself on a weekend?
Right.
On
well,
a weekend
I think that's the
this.
Universal question we all get asked.
Pretty much.
Point.
Yeah.
Why did you, I mean... What made you... Were you worried about getting into the age you're at?
Honestly, you know, it's... my goals in professional wrestling have been a sliding scale. My first goal was to just get in and learn how to wrestle. And I thought to myself, man, it's probably going to be a year or two before I have my first match. And then 6 months into training, I had a pretty big match with G-Raver. And then, you know, it was after that, it was, okay, now, you know, am I going to get the opportunity to work in other places? And then more opportunities opened up. And now, you know, the scale's been sliding even more to the point where a lot of the goals that I've set to wrestle on national television, to go to another country, seem to be within reach. Probably not in the short term, but, you know, it's something that I think I can accomplish. And you look at some of the people that are successful in wrestling right now. Christopher Daniels is, what, 45, 48 years old, and he's the Ring of Honor world champion. So, you know, I look at someone like him, and I think that, you know, there's not an age that can really stop me from achieving one of those goals.
Well, the business is completely different now than it used to be. Like, if you would have tried to get in the late 90s, when WWE wouldn't even take a look at you unless you were, you know, in your early 20s, you know, the people would tell you... your future in this business does not show many promises based on your age.
Yeah.
But now, like you said, they're hiring people who have been in this business 10 to 20 years before they even get there.
Sure.
And their age, they're probably in their mid-30s to early 40s. And it doesn't seem to be an issue anymore because I think they've reached a point where they realize stars are stars. No matter their age, well, not no matter their age to a point, but age aside, if they're able to draw money and have good matches, why not?
Yeah, and if you're entertaining.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that I was concerned getting into the business at 30 from a physical standpoint. I wasn't as concerned from a personality standpoint. You know, I talk to people for a living. Every day. And part of being a trial lawyer is telling stories to random strangers and being able to take a lot of information and sell people on an idea. So the idea of creating a character and entertaining people is something that I didn't think I would have too much of a problem with. The physicality of it is something that I've really impressed myself with how much I've been able to pick up. Mm-hmm. But I also recognize that there's a lot of things at my age that are hindrances to, you know, me reaching a certain level in the business. But I'm fine with that. You know, I didn't get into professional wrestling because I thought I was going to be the next John Cena. It'd be great if I achieved that. Mm. And I'm not saying that I don't want to be the best professional wrestler that I can. Mm. But to me, I've accomplished a lot of my goal in this industry, which is to do it. And, you know, I think for a lot of people, if I can get on the inspirational soapbox, a lot of people are just afraid to take a chance and to take a risk. And seeing a lot of the people that I worked around in the industry of the law, I feel like a lot of people got in the profession because it was easy and because they could make a decent amount of money and they could have a comfortable way of living. Mm-hmm. And that's fine, and I'm not knocking people for that, but that was just not what I wanted to do. And once I got the courage to step out and to try something that was outside of the realm of, you know, the traditional go to law school, work at a firm, and then get married, and that's your life, mm-hmm. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, obviously if you stand in front of a court of law and have to state your case, stepping in a wrestling ring to cut a promo would seem like child's play.
I wouldn't say it's child's play because there are certain nuances to the promos that are different than when you're in the courtroom. Mm-hmm. But the actual structure of telling a story, just like you do with a promo or just like you do with a match, permeates throughout what we do as attorneys. Mm. And I also teach trial advocacy at Duquesne's Law School. Basically, I teach law students how to try cases. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what we follow is the story spine by Joseph Campbell. And the story spine basically is the story outline that's been given for every story that's been told throughout time. You have a hero, you have a villain, you have challenges put in the hero's way, you have things that happen to that hero that pose a threat to him that the hero has to overcome. Mm. And eventually the hero goes out on top and then life returns back to normal. Mm. That's kind of what you're doing whenever you're wrestling as well. You know, you're introducing a baby face, you're introducing a heel, mm. and then you're telling a story about how the baby face is facing challenges from the heel, be it cheating or be it, you know, manipulating the rules to in the heel's favor. And then from there, it's the story of the babyface overcoming all those odds and then becoming triumphant.
Yeah, I wish everybody saw it as that, like, the story in that simplification and not have to insert all their fancy things in between.
Well, I mean, look, you know, the way that stories are basically told will never change. But how you get to those points and the different things you do there is really interesting. And I always find it, the matches that I'm attracted to the most now are the ones that use the basic story structure and tweak it a little bit. So there was a tag match between The New Day and Gallows and Anderson, mm-hmm. where basically they just started off super hot and Gallows and Anderson just got right on top of The New Day. And I liked it because it basically cut out the beginning of the story, like we would expect with The Shine, mm-hmm. and went right to the heat and then right to the finish. And I liked it because it was different, and not a lot of people were using that formula.
Right. There, that brings to mind a match between Shawn Michaels and Undertaker. I think the name of the pay-per-view is In Your House Ground Zero.
Okay.
Possibly. I think the spot, my memory doesn't fail me, was they were having a match, and at the end... I think it was the beginning. As soon as the bell rings, Taker takes the referee out. Because he wants Shawn that bad mm-hmm. that he doesn't want anyone getting in his way, including the referee.
Right.
So he takes the ref out, goes right after Shawn. Another ref comes in, takes that ref out. He doesn't want anyone getting in his way when he's going after Shawn. And that kind of different storytelling is so interesting to me. And I try so hard to go out of my way to look for things like that. Because everyone... Not everyone. People will go so paint by numbers today just to get to the point where they can do their spots mm-hmm. that no one stops and tries to think outside the box of getting to the end in an interesting way.
Yeah.
You know.
And I think, you know, one of the challenges that I think all wrestlers face in today's day and age is the proliferation of social media and the dwindling attention span that audiences have.
Yeah.
So, you know, to a certain extent, everyone wants to have the highlight, right? Oh, this guy does a cool neck breaker. This guy does a cool leg drop. This guy does a cool big boot. So they want to get that in. But, you know, it's at the risk of telling that quality story and maybe saving those moves for other matches.
Mm-hmm.
When you have, you know, diminishing minutes to grab people's attention, and when you're trying to put together tape so you can send out to other promotions to get work, you know, part of you wants to gravitate towards doing what you do best and doing your moves. The other part wants to tell a good story. So it's difficult. I think one of the most important things to for wrestlers to evaluate when they first start putting matches together in wrestling is, what do I want to accomplish? And that was the very first question that Brandon Kay asked me when I came to training for the first time. You know, why do you want to be in this business and what are you looking to accomplish? You know, some people want to play wrestler. They want to do all the moves that they see on television. That's fine. Some people want to, you know, go out and be the center of attention. That's fine. But, you know, really what this is about is entertaining people. And that's why when you look at your match, you need to look at your match in terms of the entire show too. So you don't want to take the same spots. You don't want to have the same cutoff. You don't want to have the same finish. And I think a lot of people get stuck in this idea that, you know, I want to do my moves because that's what I need to get on the tape so people will book me. But really, I think people are just looking for variety and for entertainment.
I've seen companies do this lately, and I wish more would adapt it because I think it's a really good idea to have a checklist in the back of run-of-the-mill finishes, run-of-the-mill cutoffs, and have the guys call one, like point it out, say this is ours, and then take it off the list.
Yeah,
like don't leave it up to the guys anymore, because I mean we're not all gonna sit and watch the whole show.
No
one does that.
Some places don't even have the capability to allow you to do that.
Some people don't even have a monitor.
Right,
like it's hard. So why not give them the list back there? That way we can see, oh, they're using that. Let's not do that. Let's think of something else. This is, maybe we can do this. I can do something with this. Just gives them more of an opportunity to be different on the show without having to keep their ear to the ground as far as what's everybody doing. Because it's hard to do that on show day when you've got your own match to worry about. And sometimes two or three run-ins on top of it.
I went to, I had a chance to wrestle for Rockstar Pro in October of last year. And that was the first thing I noticed when I got there, was they had what they called the cutoff board.
Yep.
And they gave you your time. They gave you, they wanted you to write down what your cutoff was, what your finish was, and whether you were going to go outside the ring, and whether the ref was going to take a bump. And from there, they could see if people were repeating stuff or, you know, it, because it keeps it special. It keeps it special.
Not to mention their, I think they called it their shit list, which is the list of all the guys' finishers there.
Yes.
And let you know, if you're a new guy coming in, this is what our guys do. Don't do any of these.
Yeah.
Which I think a lot of promotions should have. Like, if you want to protect your guy's move, like if you're, say you're Wardlow for IWC, he does the fireman's carry, like Falcon Arrow kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Say someone else comes in the company and does that. Say they do it in their match and it gets, they kick out at two.
You're killing the move.
You're killing the move. You're killing their champion's move. Now, you can make the argument, well, Wardlow does it better, so, but they've seen the move be kicked out of already.
Correct.
Fans don't think that deep as far as Wardlow does it better than this guy, so they don't. You can't leave that. I don't think you can leave that to chance.
Well, and you know, one of the things that was ingrained in me throughout training, and which I still think about, is, you know, you're not wrestling for the people that are coming back every week. You're wrestling for the people that have never seen you before.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal is always to try to stand out in a way that makes me memorable to the audience. And, you know, I'll touch on some of the things that I do that. But the point of that is that if no one's seen Wardlow before and knows that that's his finisher, right, then when they see that move for the first time, when someone kicks out, they're going to assume that they're going to do that in Wardlow's match.
Mm-hmm.
And no one even knows enough to think that deep to say, well, he must do it better. So I think really you have to think about the people that haven't been there before, because let's be honest, wrestling fans are going to come to wrestling shows. You need to get the people that aren't the hardcore wrestling fans to continue to come back and make them fans.
And the fans are going to bring new people a lot of the time.
Absolutely.
People who just sometimes are too busy to come out. And this one particular night, they're free. They want to go see a wrestling show. And maybe they like it so much they'll come back. You have to present it to them like it's their first time every time.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
You know,
you and I are on the same page there. And I think too, you know, we get tools from our trainers as wrestlers, but no one tells us how to be successful doing this. They show us the basic moves, they tell us the basic psychology, and then it's up to you to make your own way. And I think as a talent, right, you owe it to the people that you're working with to be creative enough to not take their moves. And that comes from just, you know, respecting the place that you're at and respecting the people that are working before you.
Right.
And I think that, you know, Rockstar was onto something with their list and with their cutoff list. A couple other places that I've worked have done that as well. And that's something that I really think should be done in any wrestling promotion, just to give variety to people.
I agree. I'm going to take a break. When I come back, I want to talk to you about training with Brandon Kay.
Absolutely.
Because I love Brandon, and I feel like we need to talk about him a lot.
Absolutely.
So, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with David Lawless.
If you're a fan of wrestling and horror, go over to prowrestlingtees.com/Matt Conard and pick yourself up a spooky t-shirt. Now available, the newly released I Am the Night t-shirt, the Batman-inspired shirt, can be found at prowrestlingtees.com/Matt Conard. Just in case you didn't hear me say it the first two times, prowrestlingtees.com/Matt Conard.
And we're back with David Lawless. Man, I want to talk about, while we're on, because I want to talk about this dude as much as possible to anybody that'll listen. Because next to Shirley Doe, there's no one in this area I respect more than Brandon Kay. Obviously, you went to shows before you got in. Were you aware of how much of a cornerstone Brandon was at this area before getting trained with him? You're just like, this dude knows he's doing train me.
I had no clue who he was.
No clue who Brandon was?
No. So when I made the decision to train, I went to a show in July.
Mm.
I saw Gory.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I showed up to train and I met this guy who looked like the lead singer Nickelback with... with a bandana on,
uh-huh.
And his name was Brandon Kay.
Yeah.
And he talked to me about diet, why I wanted to get in the industry, talked to me about what training would entail. And then from there, I never realized the relationship that I would cultivate with him over the next 2 years. But man, not enough can be said about how great of a talent he is and how great of a coach he is too.
Do you think you could have gotten better training than with him in this area? Like... I can't think of anybody, if I was in your position, this is just speaking from knowing who trains where.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone I'd want to get train me more than either Brandon Kay or Shirley Doe.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the time that Brandon trained me, Justin Idol might have been training as well.
Okay.
And I've worked with Justin. And I like Justin.
No, he's I like very Justin. Helpful too. Yeah, I like Justin too.
But I think you hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. As far as training's concerned, I couldn't have done better than Brandon. And I'm very thankful for being able to meet him and for the lessons that that he was able to instill in me throughout our training. And you know, the training probably lasted me for it was about six months of intense training.
Mm-hmm.
I was very lucky. Also, that I broke in and started training with a really great class. So the day that I tried out, I also tried out with a talent that I assume will be on this show. His name's Lee Moriarty.
Think about it.
Maybe you've heard of him. He's in Mexico now.
Yeah, Lee's great.
And then about 2 or 3 months after I started training, there was another gentleman that started training with me by the name of Duke Davis.
Duke.
Maybe you've heard of him too.
It's hard not to see Duke.
Right. So I got very lucky in the sense that, you know, there were a lot of committed people to training, and Brandon really liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And that gave Brandon the opportunity to really push us hard when we went through training. And that's what I think allowed us to get trained so quickly. Because
mm-hmm.
I didn't expect to debut and start wrestling until a year after training. And then all of a sudden, 6 months after training, it's like, okay, you got your first match. And then your second match is going to be against G-Raver. Mm-hmm. I was like, wow.
To be honest, though, man, just coming from being in that spot at one point, you're never ready for your first match.
No.
No amount of training really is going to prepare you for the actual experience.
No. And you know, you're always trying to improve. You're always trying to throw new things into your repertoire, into your matches. You're always training.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not in the ring, it's outside of the ring. By working on your character or going to the gym or eating right, coming up with t-shirt designs, mm-hmm. coming up with catchphrases, just even marketing yourself. Like, this is a 24-hour-a-day business, whether mm-hmm. you like it or not. And I think some people do it as a casual hobby. I think for me, you know, obviously I take it very seriously, but I have a lot of commitments in my life
mm-hmm.
Between wrestling, teaching, being de facto in-house counsel for my friend's record label / concert management. between, you know, my girlfriend, who I love unbelievably mm-hmm. For all she puts up with. Like,
hey, man, she's not going to hear this. You don't have to worry.
Yeah, right. That's my... That's an Easter egg, right?
Yeah, there's the Easter egg.
No, I mean, it's, you know, you're always learning. And, you know, I still get nervous before all my matches. And I still sometimes think, am I ready for this?
Well, you need that, man. You need that uncertainty. You need that nervousness to remind you that that you still don't know 100% of what you're doing. And that you want this to go well.
Yeah.
Like, this is important to you. Because if it wasn't, you would just be like, here we go again. We're going to, whatever. Is that... It's that nonchalant, indifferent feeling you got to worry about.
Yeah.
When that feeling comes around, you got to either change something or maybe you just need to leave.
Yeah. I worry about complacency. And I really think that, you know, right now I'm at a point with my wrestling career, at least, that I'm starting to, you know, really think more about my character, about the moves that I do, about the vision that I have for my character as well, and where that's going.
It takes people a while sometimes when they break in to even find who they are. It's when you find who you are that is really the turning point as to jumping on that promotion machine.
Yeah.
And just, well, even some people don't even do that. You find who you are and then you think, this alone, I've found my character. I found who I am. This alone will make me famous.
Yeah.
And that's not how that works.
No.
Finding that thing will be just a spark in the fire that needs to be your presence in the wrestling community.
Yeah.
Like you said, you need to be on it all the time. You need to sleep. Well, not... Yeah. That's such a cliche fucking thing.
Sleep wrestling.
You need to constantly be thinking about, how can I present myself in a different way? How can I... What does this design work for me? How can I make my brand... Like, you need to be a constant cauldron of ideas just bubbling all the time. It's exhausting at times.
Yeah.
It's exhausting to be on all the time, but it's necessary. It's necessary to keep yourself relevant and keep yourself engaged in your own profile.
Well, yeah. And then, I mean, I think pro wrestling is one of the hardest sports to... There's no mastery of it, but it's one of the hardest sports to even participate in, because you're thinking about your character constantly. You're thinking about who you are as a wrestler. And then it's like, oh, by the way, you have to go in the ring and work with guys anywhere from 150 to 300 pounds mm-hmm. that are going to be running at you full speed and not get killed. And you've got to remember what's going on in the match, play to the audience, and you still have to be in this character. I mean, it's, you know, you look at athletes, and athletes have personas of their own,
mm-hmm.
right? But when they step on the court, they're using their athleticism. They're being, no one's looking at them and saying, this is how I identify a LeBron James, or this is how I identify a Sidney Crosby. They're just fantastic athletes that go out and perform on an exceptional level. When you're a professional wrestler, you have to be a great athlete, but then you have to be a great athlete that is a great character, that is putting that character and infusing that character into the matches. Mm-hmm. That is extremely challenging. And, you know, I think for me, with my character, it's something that I got very lucky in finding, and I've been very fortunate and blessed along the way here to be given opportunities and put in spots where I've been able to shine and show my strengths. But, you know, every day it's thinking about, you know, what could I say, what could I do to stand out? I think it was Paul London and DJ Z that gave the advice of, you know, you never just want to be a dude, right? You want to do something that makes people remember you. Mm-hmm. When people are, and I think Paul brought this up, and I also think Marcus brought this up too. When a group of people leave a wrestling show, and they're out at a Eaton Park or a Denny's or whatever eating after, you want to be the person that they remember. And they're not saying, hey, remember that white guy who did that drop kick really well? Like, I want to come back and see him. And that was kind of what inspired me with the gavel and with the business cards and with the t-shirt. Cards
were great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah. And that was something that I always wanted to do because, you know, it works both ways if you're a babyface or a heel, but it also gives the fans something that they can interact with. I mean, we just did the Connors Cure show at Yawk High School, and there were just people ripping the business cards up and throwing them at me. So it's a good opportunity to interact with the fans. And, you know, I even heard that there's kids at a school that'll take business cards from the show and they'll throw them at each other in school, like they're the gavel David Lawless, which I couldn't be happier about. There's the music for the show.
Fuck. That's some telemarketer. Great. Now I got to cut that. Anyway, I was going to go somewhere with this. With the cards. Some people don't find it as quickly as, say, you were fortunate enough to. Some people spend years trying to find who they are and just end up being dudes. I was a dude for like 2 years. I had a chin beard. I had a chin beard and a leather vest, and I was nobody. I was the Reaper without even having any sort of detail screaming Grim Reaper in the first place. It was a moniker. It wasn't who I was yet. And it took me 2 years to even start to head down that road. And some people I've known been in 5-6 years still don't have it. Still have not found that thing that sets them apart. It's something you have to really dive into different mediums for. You gotta watch TV, watch movies, like read books, find something different, and say, can this be a character? And if you can relate enough to it, I mean, I personally think that's the hardest struggle.
Absolutely, and you know, when people say that your character should be an extension of yourself or should be you turned up, that's what David Lawless is. I mean. You know, for me, thinking about what it means to be a lawyer, being a lawyer myself, it was a real natural progression to create this character. Because, you know, one thing that I don't think people appreciate about people that are lawyers, you know, I do all, in my practice, I do all civil plaintiffs work. So what that means is someone's been harmed by someone. My job is to go in to figure out what went wrong, what could have been done to prevent it, and then to help that person to, you know, either win a trial or obtain a settlement. So when you're coming to a lawyer, right, I don't know who's calling my office. Okay, so I don't know if I'm going to get a call from someone that fell in a ditch at a construction site, or I'm going to get a call from someone that underwent a gallbladder removal procedure and something went wrong. But I'll tell you what, in order to figure out what went wrong, I have to know how to do it.
Right.
So as a lawyer, you're very well trained in thinking and in researching. So my job is to figure out, okay, how do they do this procedure? How did they do it in this situation? And what went wrong? So when I think about that in the context of being a professional wrestler and being this character, it's like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to be a better wrestler than everyone because I understand wrestling better than everyone. I'm smarter than everyone. I will know your moveset better than you do your moves themselves. Now, ultimately, I'm not that good, and that's why I have to cheat all the time. But that's, you know, that character is what I do on a daily basis, just without being a jerk and without calling people morons.
Yeah.
But you're right. I mean, for some people, they really struggle to find their character. But man, the people that are passionate about professional wrestling, when they find that character, mm-hmm. you can just see it. You can just see it. And I think, you know, I shared with you before we went on the air about how cool it was to see you at the Night of Superstars come out with the cloak and with the mask.
Mm-hmm.
And man, it just, it was one of those things that, like, this is the Reaper.
Mm-hmm.
This is the guy that's badass walking down to the ring, staring people down.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another person I want to give a shout out to who's really found their character is Christian Black. He's doing this Bayou Bully character with these awesome promos that, you know, where he's basically like doing a voiceover of himself sitting in a smoky room and it's black and white. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. And that's someone who's gone through many iterations of characters
mm-hmm.
and now has found one that is really cool.
Yeah. What do you think is the most valuable thing that you learned from Brandon, like, in your training? Do you think there's one thing that sticks with you, like, to this day that he taught you?
There's been many things, okay? So let me just say that I can't even scratch the surface on it. The one thing that Brandon has always ingrained in us, which I think is really important, is that there is a rhythm to wrestling. And everyone says slow down. You know, I think whenever I listened, when Jackson and RC were on here, that was the advice that they got, that yep. they said they got, which was slow down. But the one thing that Brandon really instilled in us, and then Samu actually kind of talked about it as well mm-hmm. when he was in town, was it's almost like listening to a song when you're thinking about a match.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're thinking about the pace and the way it goes. You know, when you're going through your bump and feed, it's not just bump, bump, bump. It's bump, bump, whoa, bump. You know, and that's where you see some of the really talented wrestlers that have that timing. So you get the give the crowd an opportunity to get invested with you. So that's something that I think has been really important, is the rhythm of the matches. And that's something that I still struggle with to this day. But it's a piece of advice that I think everyone can appreciate.
No, I agree with that. It's I believe I said on their episode, I'll echo that time and time again, to slow down.
Yeah.
And just take your time. Because when you slow down and take your time, things speed up so much, you think you're going much slower than you are. You're really not.
Right.
You're really going a lot faster than you think you are. So it's just the, if you think you're going too slow, slow down some more.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think too, the other thing which is interesting with the slow is, like, you set the pace in your matches as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the one thing that I really have struggled with as well, and I still struggle with. This is not an opportunity for me to talk about my faults on here, but I guess, you know, when you set the tone in your match, you set the speed, you also set the nature of the match itself, and that gives people an opportunity to really get behind and get into it, you know? So what I mean by that is, if you're going boom, 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 boom in the match, people are going to expect that from start to finish. But if you start off slow and you go slow and you keep that pace going, then when you speed it up just a hair, it's going to make it look faster, but it's not actually going full speed. And that's where, you know, that's something I need to work on and I need to do in my matches, because I'm never going to outspeed people that I'm wrestling with. You know, I'm never going to outmove them as far as, like, doing cool stuff in the ring. So setting the pace and really dictating that is really crucial. Mm-hmm. To anyone's matches.
I agree. All right, we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, we'll wrap up with David Lawless.
Hey guys, just a quick reminder, you can follow the podcast on Twitter at Wrestling Death. You can follow me at Reaper Matt C, and you can follow our guest David Lawless over at Gavel Lawless. This weekend, you can find me down in Madison, West Virginia for All Star Wrestling. And only other thing is, please rate, share, and subscribe the podcast. It helps our notoriety a great deal. So thanks very much, and enjoy the rest of the show.
We're back with David Lawless. All right, Lawless, it's question time. Usually, I have at least 4 or 5 questions from one Marcus Mann. Marcus didn't send any questions for you.
You're slipping, Marcus.
Just one, a little disclaimer here. Marcus is in no way legally or morally tied to the show, and he does so in his own free time and or if he gives a shit.
I actually gave him that disclaimer, too. That's legalese right there.
No, Marcus would give me shit if I didn't. You know I don't have to send you questions.
He's just going to want to try to monetize. He's going into business for himself, that Marcus.
And then we're
going to
move on. He's like, why didn't you make a bigger deal about me not sending questions? I'm the show, Connard. He's going to love that. Okay.
That Marcus impression. I did
get a question from Andrew DiNardo.
Yes.
I don't want to butcher his name. Doesn't matter. Mick Foley was hooked when he saw Jimmy Superfly Snuka at MSG coming from the top ropes. What moment / wrestler got you hooked on wrestling?
The moment that I will always remember is I was downstairs in my basement with a friend. He was flipping through channels. We landed on the USA Network right in time to see the conclusion of Razor Ramon losing to the 1-2-3 Kid Monday Night Raw. And I was like, man, this is awesome. So from there, started watching regularly, and I would say probably the first real event that I ordered that I really got into was SummerSlam 95.
Okay.
Which was from Pittsburgh, had the Razor Ramon Shawn Michaels ladder match part 2 for the Intercontinental title with the main event of Mabel versus Diesel.
Right.
So that was probably the moment that got me hooked into wrestling was 1-2-3 Kid versus Razor Ramon. And then periodically throughout the years, there's been certain things that have happened that have really reinvigorated my passion. I think one moment that stands out more recently is actually not the CM Punk pipe bomb.
That's a go-to for people.
It is. Mine was 2 weeks before the pipe bomb when he won the triple threat match to become number one contender and announced then that his contract was expiring and that he was leaving WWE.
Really?
Yeah. It was right after he defeated Rey Mysterio and I want to say it was The Miz or John Morrison on Monday Night Raw. And I had been casually watching at that point. And then he cut the promo after the match talking about how he was the number one contender and he was leaving WWE after Money in the Bank, and I'm like, well, I gotta see where this goes next. And then I kept, you know, and then the pipe bomb happened, which was iconic, obviously. But that was another big moment for me, at least as a fan.
Right.
But first moment, hands down, 1-2-3 Kid versus Razor Ramon. Can't beat that match.
No, it's it's a great match, and arguably one of, if not the biggest upset of all time.
Yeah, at that point in wrestling.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it is game time. Let's play a game.
Ooh, this will be good. It's time to play the game.
Time to play the game! The name of the game this week is What's Your Finish?
Oh, boy, okay.
Wrestling finishers usually come along with names that are associated with the people doing them.
Okay. Like
Razor's Edge.
Sure.
That sort of thing.
Walls of Jericho,
yeah. Etc. These are five finisher names, and you have to tell me whose finisher it is.
Okay.
I'm really excited to see if you get all these.
I hope I get a perfect score.
There's five of them. You have to get 3 out of 5 to win.
Okay. What do I win?
Nothing.
Awesome.
You get to say you didn't lose on my show.
Can I come back on the podcast at some point?
Of course you can.
Awesome.
There you go. You get the chance to win the honor of coming back sometime as a repeat guest.
Good. Marcus better have questions that time.
You're going to get a text from Marcus. Don't tell me what to do.
You're never getting questions.
Never getting questions, ever.
Yeah.
All right. First one is That's Incredible.
Justin Credible.
That is correct.
Which was a jumping, spinning tombstone.
It is.
Yeah.
It is now adapted by my good friend Ron Mathis.
Okay.
Because he loves ECW.
I loved Justin Credible's debut in ECW.
Loved it.
Yeah, I remember watching it. It was on the regular television show.
Mm.
And I remember when they introduced him and they were like, this guy, you know, is something. He's Justin Credible. And then when he came out, he just looked so badass. Like, wearing the jean shorts, having the shaved head. Like, he just had an attitude about him that was so cool.
Oh, would he know how many backyarders he would inspire with his attire.
Oh, yeah.
With his attire. I'm not shitting on his work. I like Justin.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, Ice Pick.
Was that Glacier?
That was
from WCW?
That was.
Yeah. I can't remember what the move is itself, but how could you forget a character like Glacier?
It was a, I believe it was the Umaga gimmick. The thumb
thrust. Oh, the thumb.
I think it was a thumb thrust.
Okay.
All right. Old school expulsion.
Old school expulsion. I got to wave the white flag on this one.
It is one Steve Corino.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Shit.
It's like a face buster and neck breaker, like weird combo.
I should have known that because he's the king of old school.
Exactly.
Damn it.
Exactly.
He yelled at me so loud.
Did he really?
Ring of Honor camp. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, man.
You have to tell this now.
Okay.
Like, we'll get back to this.
So I went to Ring of Honor camp, right? I'm 1 year into wrestling. Mm-hmm. I get accepted to the Ring of Honor camp. I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, man, I can't wait to get down there. I'm going to show Ring of Honor my stuff.
Yeah.
At this point, I'm wearing some, like, $60 singlet that I bought from some company online. And I'm still wearing I'm wearing LeBron's. Like, LeBron's. No
boots.
Kick pads. Yeah, I wear the kick pads now because I like wearing basketball shoes because my ankles and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just wearing, like, LeBron's tennis shoes.
Right.
Basketball shoes.
Mm-hmm.
So I get down there. I think I've got this great gear. It just looks like shit. I think I've got this great look. And I did a tag match. The ending broke down horribly. I wasn't skilled enough to be able to fix it. And then Christopher Daniels, who was our instructor at the Ring of Honor camp, mm-hmm. was saying, you know, like, you could have done this. And then Carino, he'd had enough of the lackluster matches. And he was like, guys, you're at fucking Ring of Honor camp. Step up. You're a lawyer and you're wearing basketball shoes. He's like, what lawyer do you know that wears basketball shoes? So I remember standing in the ring. And of course, at Ring of Honor camp, there's 45 people there. We're standing in the ring at the Monster Factory, right? So not only is Carino there, along with Christopher Daniels, Moose, Adam Cole, Danny Cage, Punisher Martinez, people that, you know, I mean, you know, maybe you've heard of them. Mm-hmm. They're in the business.
Mm-hmm.
He's just screaming at me, and I'm like, oh, God, I have a lot to learn. So I went up and talked to him after. He was super cool, great guy. Mm-hmm. I'm really happy for him and the success that he has. He's now at WWE. I was going to say WCW, but... Yeah, so yeah, Steve Corino yelled at me really loud. And hopefully if I ever get a tryout at the Performance Center, he'll remember me as the lawyer.
Oh, the fucking lawyer again.
Yeah. Oh, is your basketball shoes still? What lawyer wears basketball shoes? He's right, though.
No, he's not wrong.
Yeah.
All right, number four, Psycho Guillotine.
Is that Psycho Sid?
No.
No, because he had the powerbomb.
Yes.
Psycho Guillotine. About that. Shit, this is really hard.
Yeah, that's the point.
Oh my gosh. I think this is the hardest game you've had on the show thus far.
Maybe.
Psycho Guillotine. I want to say this is someone from the 90s. Waylon Mercy.
Nope.
Damn it! I was hoping it would be him.
That is the Luchador Psicosis.
Okay.
This is Leg Drop.
A leg drop?
The top rope leg drop.
Okay.
The Psycho Guillotine.
That makes sense. What was Waylon Mercy's finisher? Do we know?
Sleeper.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he just put people to sleep.
Can't believe that character never got over.
It kind of did. Bray Wyatt. Same thing.
Pretty much. Without the knife tattoo.
Yeah, without the knife tattoo, you put a little more fog in there, it's Waylon Mercy.
Okay. I like the white pants that he wore.
Yeah. Again, it's what Bray did.
Yeah.
When he started. White
Pretty
pants.
Much. Pretty
white
much.
Pants, Hawaiian shirt. Okay, last one.
All right, I got to get this.
You got to. You got to get this one. I think you'll get this one.
Okay.
The curtain call.
Oh, man. I wish I could phone a friend. The curtain call.
It's right there, man. Marcus is probably yelling at his whatever listening device right now.
I know.
Because he always knows all of these.
I know, and he's never going to want to work with me ever again if I
don't
get
this. To mention you buried him for not giving me questions.
I didn't bury him.
Which he's not obligated to do.
No, I want to get this right.
Yeah. Take your time. There,
the curtain call. Oh, no, Goldust was the final cut. I wanted to say Goldust, but it's not Goldust. Because he would have been... curtain call. I think
Movie director.
Take your time, man.
All right, I'm going to go Goldust.
You're going to go Goldust?
I'm going to have to.
Okay, that's your final answer?
I got it.
You're going to go... I need a confirmation from you.
All right, I'm going Goldust.
It was Goldust!
All right!
You got it!
All right.
You've won the opportunity to come back to the show at some point.
Perfect. Yes!
I was real like, oh, he's got it right here. Just fucking... Just stick with it. Just stick with that.
But at some point, he changed it to the Final Cut, though.
I think he might have changed that. No, they were different.
They're different. Okay. The curtain call was the reverse DDT.
Right. Yeah, the curtain call was the lifting falling inverted DDT.
Correct.
And the final cut was the swinging vertical suplex.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Good. All right. You hear that, Marcus? I got it.
And good for you.
I knew it before you knew. I didn't.
By the way, my Marcus is just Raven. That's all it is.
That's fine.
Nah. Well, why me? Why pick on me? Yeah, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me. Let me.
Yeah, you got anything you want to plug, Ski?
Yes. Let me plug my social media. You can find me at Instagram, which is my favorite form of social media, Gavel David Lawless. That's GAVELDAVIDLAWLESS. I just started Twitter. That's Gavel Lawless. And then I have a Facebook, facebook.com/GavelDavidLawless. So any promoters out there or anyone listening that wants to see the Gavel David Lawless come, I can sing, I can cut a mean promo, I throw business cards out to the audience, and I can sometimes wrestle. So, but thank you also for having me on the show.
Absolutely, man.
For David Lawless, I am Matt Connard. Stay cool.
I'm going to ask you this as a favor.
Yeah.
During the podcast, if I say right too much,
okay,
point it out, and that way it'll get me to stop.
All right.
Because I have a habit of when I'm listening to people, just replying, right, 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 a lot. Mm-hmm. And it's annoying. I edited the podcast last night, and I probably said it, I'm not joking, 200 times.
Yeah.
And... people pointed out before, I'm like, oh, that's, yeah, I say it. I say it a lot.
Yeah.
So if there's a point where you're like, he's saying right a lot, I'm like, you don't have to say right every 5 minutes. I'm like, ah, okay.
This will be good because when I read the transcripts back from my depositions or my trials, it's like, okay. And then I'll ask the next question and blah, blah, blah. Okay. And then, so I appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm just trying not to annoy my listeners too much with a million rights. It's like I'm Austin or something. Right. Right,
that's,
right,
that's,
right.
That's your what?
Yeah.
That's your shirt. That's your shirt.
I think it kills the mystique if there's just a Reaper on a shirt going, right, right, right.
Well, that's maybe you're the Reaper that's confirming the truth. Right?
Right?
I just said it.
You're scared of me, right?
I just did the catchphrase.